Listen to me while I tell you of the Spaniard that blighted me life. Listen to me while I tell you of the man who stole my future wife. Was at the bullfight where we met him, enduring his daring display. And while I went out for some peanuts and a program, the dirty dog stole her away. Oh yes, oh yes. So tonight I will have my revenge. If I catch Antonia Spagonia, the toreador, with one mighty swipe I will dislocate his belly jaw. I'll catch the old blighter, I will. And when I catch him, the blighter I'll kill. He shall die, he shall die. He shall die till the eye tie. He shall jolly well die. He shall die, he shall die. For I'll raise a bunion on his Spanish onion if I catch him bending tonight. For if I catch Spagoni, he will wish that he'd never been born. And for that special reason, my stiletto I've taken out of pawn. It cost me 5 shillings to fetch it. It's expensive, has caused me great pain. But the pawnbroker promised when I kissed the Cody, you know, he let me put it in pawn once again. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So tonight there will be dirty work. If I catch Antonia Spagonia, the warrior, with one mighty swipe I will dislocate his belly jaw, that English belly. I'll catch the old blighter, I will. And when I catch him, the blighter I kill, he shall die. He shall die. He shall die till the eyes die. He shall jolly well die. He shall die. He shall die. I shall die. I shall die. I shall die. 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 Die.
Greetings. Greetings, my fellow Republic Broadcasting Network listeners. You could have your voice here if you look into it at republicbroadcasting.org. Today is the 4th of December in the year of our Lord, 2022, or CE if you prefer, but the Holy Spirit told me that means Christ eternal. And I'd like to discuss today about a crime that shouldn't be erased by history, and from many different angles, and they're still trying to say he wasn't guilty, that he's innocent, and they want to put this in the school books. And it was Leo Frank. And he raped and murdered and maybe raped again, who knows. Little Mary Fagan, April 26, 2013. And he got his just desserts in 2015. But I'd like you to listen to this really graceful bit that she did about 2 weeks ago. She had done one in 2019, but this one, this audio is really packed. So really listen. And see what things you're not familiar with. And we want to discuss it after the bottom of the hour. I'd like everyone to call in. Anyone wants to. We'll try to do a roundtable maybe. And there's a lot more detail to it. But I just wanted a little flavor there of what was popular at the time. That was Al Jolson singing. And of course he was never had any retribution for doing blackface in the jazz singer. To this day, of course. So this is the kind of control that the same ones still have over entertainment, as we're seeing being all over the news lately. And it really makes you think how they want you to think. Music is very powerful. You know, before they had television, they had the radio, they had plays, and in the International Jew, the world's foremost problem, Henry Ford said that they had converted the national music to jazz. And this was the Ashkenazi Jews and the klezmer and then the clarinet and all the jazz that just filthified everything and still going on today. So please listen to this audio. It should run to about the first break, I think. If you'll play that for us, Sam. Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry. I should have brought it up sooner. Okay. Yeah, so it'll be in just a half a minute here. We'll get going with that. But really listen to this. And after that all took place, later on, they said, oh, all these black lynchings. That, okay. We'll discuss about the lynchings later. Thank you, Sam.
Hey, internet friends. Isn't it odd that a solitary moment can change everything? How one person's actions can transform the future and influence lives for decades and even centuries? A single wicked act, a handful of rushed lies, retribution, and what we're left with is the thing that emerged from the black pit of chaos. A patient group who has long waited for everyone to forget the past so that they can rewrite it, thereby carving out a new future. We've arrived at their moment, now, as I speak. The culmination of their suffering, their plotting, their efforts. The Anti-Defamation League has waited a long time for their reign, enticing the masses under the guise of all that is just and fair. With their thorns wrapping around society, shaping public discourse, silencing those who would seek to question them, all to be a ruling force. Unquestioned and unmatched. Some would even argue that the ADL is the single most influential organization in the United States. But is the ADL worthy of such power, such influence? Are they a betterment to society as they claim? Or are they unfit, illegitimate, their very existence built upon the sleight of hand and half-truths? You'll be able to answer that question for me after this video, using official court documents, newspaper articles, witness testimonies, and statements from the victim's living family. I'm going to tell you the story of how the life of little Mary Fagan came to an end, how the Anti-Defamation League rose to power, and why the ADL seeks to erase this moment from the pages of history. As a reminder, facts are not hateful. And as the quote goes, truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. You just let it loose. And it'll defend itself. Let's travel back in time to over a century ago, to my hometown of Atlanta, Georgia, April 26, 1913. Post-Civil War, Atlanta had finally stopped smoldering. Businessmen and workers alike flocked south for opportunity. One of these businessmen was a 29-year-old Jewish man by the name of Leo Frank, who was raised in New York and had spent the last several years touring Europe after graduating from Cornell, learning the ways of business so he could run Atlanta's National Pencil Company, a sweatshop factory where over 100 children were employed, a four-story building caked in grime with little in the way of ventilation where Frank served as a superintendent. Outside of work, Frank was heavily involved in the local Jewish community, becoming president of the Atlanta chapter of B'nai B'rith, which is kind of like a Masonic society with their lodges and doings, but only for Jewish members. B'nai B'rith is the ADL's parent organization and was founded in 1843 in New York as a Jewish counterpart of fraternal orders that were then flourishing in America. It was a Saturday, a holiday to be precise, on the day that was once celebrated as Confederate Memorial Day, when 13-year-old pencil factory worker Mary Fagan entered the office of her boss, Leo Frank, to collect her pay of $1.20. Mary was just 12 years old when she began working for Frank. She and her family, they didn't have much. When her mother was 6 months pregnant with her, Mary's father died of measles, leaving her mother widowed with four other young children. Mary's mom moved her family from Alabama to East Point, Atlanta, Georgia, where they had more family and more opportunity for employment. Mary herself was a beautiful girl with fair skin, blue eyes, dimples, and long reddish-brown hair. And she was described by her family and peers as a sweet girl with a bubbly and loving personality. On this tragic Saturday in 1913, Mary set out to collect her paycheck and meet her boy sweetheart outside of the factory that afternoon so they could go watch the parade together. Sadly, that never happened. Leo Frank would be the last known person to see Mary Fagan alive. The following morning, before the sun had even risen in the east, the night watchman, also known as the security guard of the pencil factory, a black man by the name of Newt Lee, discovered Mary's dead and brutally beaten body discarded in the basement of the factory, amongst a sea of bloody pencil shavings with a cord around her neck. And beside her body, two notes describing her murderer through Mary's point of view. She wrote about a long, tall black man called the Night Witch. It was written like she scribbled it down in her final moments, even though the note wasn't in her handwriting. Her autopsy later revealed that the 13-year-old had not only been beaten, but raped by her killer. Of course, Newt Lee was immediately brought in for questioning. He was the main suspect. He'd discovered Mary's body, after all. Police fired a gun right next to Lee's head, and he was subject to intense interrogation as the hunt for Mary's killer commenced. But despite the pressure, Lee never confessed. According to police reports, a blood-soaked shirt was left at Newt Lee's home. Leo Frank's attorney hinted to police where they would find the evidence. Newspapers published this development, and the mob nearly lynched Newt Lee then and there. But police were not as easily swayed. There was strong evidence to support that Leo Frank himself had hired private detectives to frame his night watchman because the detectives had done such a sloppy job. All of this was relayed in the Atlanta Constitution and even in the New York Times in 1914, alongside reports of bribery and witness intimidation. Once Lee was found innocent, two suspects remained. The first suspect was a black man by the name of Jim Conley, the factory's janitor, who curiously held the lowest status job at the factory, yet somehow was paid 50% more than all the other child laborers like Mary. Conley was even given special privileges by his superintendent, Leo Frank. They had an interestingly close working relationship. You see, Conley never had to keep up with his time card. He never had to punch the clock like the others. He could just come and go as he pleased. The second suspect was Conley's boss, Leo Frank, who went on record as the last person to witness Mary alive. Unlike Conley, Leo Frank hired the best defense team money could buy. Unlike Conley, Frank had the money for a legal team to prove his innocence. Not only that, but unlike Conley, Frank had the backing of B'nai B'rith to influence and sway his trial. The grand jury consisted of 23 members, including 5 prominent members of the Jewish community in Atlanta, 2 of which were reportedly from the synagogue Frank attended. Mary Fagan's murder trial made headline after headline all summer. You see, Georgia's summers are notoriously hot and humid. The days are long, the sun unrelenting. All you have to do is walk outside and you'll start sweating. The trial began to heat up after Conley admitted that he wasn't illiterate like he had previously stated. Oh no, he could read and write just fine. So fine, in fact, that Conley swore his boss, Leo Frank, paid him to write Mary's murder note. The one about the long, tall black man, the Night Witch. As Conley continued, it seemed like his involvement was more and more like he was Frank's accomplice, with Frank as the main suspect. Unlike Conley, Frank absolutely refused to be cross-examined. But there was overwhelming evidence against him, including blood and hair left at the crime scene, as well as Frank's ever-changing alibi. Frank's accounts of his interaction with Mary in her final moments began to unravel. They morphed with every retelling. Originally, Frank swore that he stayed in his office following Mary's departure after receiving her pay envelope. But later, Frank stated he might have taken an unconscious bathroom break that would have placed him walking past the metal room, a site where Mary was believed to have been murdered, and at the suspected time when the attack occurred. Another young worker was called to the witness stand, claiming that she had gone to Frank's office right after Mary had left, and Frank wasn't there. He was nowhere to be found, and she even waited around for a bit, but concluded that Frank had gone home for the day. The character witnesses included a string of female employees who all had the same thing to say about Frank. He was handsy with the girls, he touched them, he stared, he made rude comments. The guy was a well-known pervert, and all the female employees knew it. They all said so. Quote, 16-year-old Nellie Wood told the court how Frank had pushed himself against her and touched her breast. 14-year-old Nellie Pettis, a witness for the defense, recounted how Leo Frank had propositioned her for sex. 20 girls in all gave similar testimony about Frank's improprieties. Several male employees described how they had witnessed Leo Frank rub up against young female co-workers a little bit too much. The testimony was so explicit that the judge had to clear the courtroom of women. End quote. After a long, drawn-out trial that garnered immense public attention and claims from the prosecution that alleged bribery and witness tampering from Frank's legal team had occurred, the grand jury reached a unanimous verdict. All the grand jurors, including the 5 Jewish jurors, signed the bill of indictment against Leo Frank. They'd all decided he was guilty. After being convicted of murder, the judge sentenced Frank to death by hanging, which was set to be carried out in October. But after Frank's legal team attempted several failed appeals all the way up to the federal level, 13 separate appeals to be exact, in 1915, under intense political pressure, attorney and Georgia Governor Slayton, on his last day in office, had Frank's sentence reduced to life in prison. Alongside the order, Governor Slayton wrote that the U.S. Supreme Court, quote, found in the trial no error in law and had correctly, in my judgment, found that there was sufficient evidence to sustain the verdict, end quote. Keep in mind that Frank, on top of murdering Mary Fagan, had tried to pin the murder on 2 different black men. Frank claimed that rape and murder were black crimes, and any black person who testified against him should be barred because their testimony was invalid based on their skin color. When the public heard that Governor Slayton had reduced Frank's sentence, they were angry. They believed the justice system had failed Mary Fagan, the real victim. After all, Governor Slayton was a former partner at the law firm of Frank's defense team. So the public suspected some under-the-table deals and bribery. As a result, a group of about 25 men who called themselves the Knights of Mary Fagan took justice into their own hands. They kidnapped Leo Frank from prison and hanged him in Marietta, Georgia, his body facing the direction of the Fagan residence. You remember I told you in the beginning that Leo Frank was the president of the Atlanta chapter of B'nai B'rith, an organization whose mission preaches philanthropy and community outreach. But apparently they did a little bit too much community outreach because they were accused of espionage during the Civil War and implicated in the assassination of President Lincoln, with the goal of subverting and fragmenting America so that it could once again fall under the British crown. And this was documented by both Gentile and Jewish scholars alike. They were accused of being spies. Spies for the crown. It didn't matter to B'nai B'rith that Leo Frank was found guilty and convicted of murder by a unanimous jury. Even when he was sitting in his jail cell, the Atlanta chapter re-elected Frank as president. Members of B'nai B'rith stated that they believed the real murderer was Jim Conley, the janitor. And the testimony of a black man, a second-class citizen in their eyes, was unreliable. Furthermore, B'nai B'rith claimed that the trial was too hasty, and the only honest people in the courtroom were Frank and his defense team. Everybody else, they claim, was either bribed, threatened, or fell under one all-encompassing term, an anti-Semite. All my sources are listed as the pinned comment under this YouTube video, and as always, I look forward to your comments. Thank you for watching, subscribing, and supporting my channel on Patreon. Bye.
Alrighty. So in a few minutes, we'll talk about this. And I forgot to give out the chat room. Yours truly, Mer, M-E-R, yours truly, mer.chatango.com.chatandtank. chatandgo.com, and there's a few of us in here, and it's very interesting, and don't you think? You notice how 5 of the all-white jury were Jews that found him guilty? Thought it was very interesting. I have some break time.
With one mighty swipe, I will dislocate his belly jaw. I'll catch the old blighter, I will. And when I catch him, the blighter I'll kill. He shall die, he shall die. He shall die, 3 eyes tie. He shall jolly well die. He shall die, he shall die. For I'll raise a bunion on his Spanish onion if I catch him bending tonight.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
What have we learned from the recent election? I'm Peter Serafin with this week's Liberty Minute, brought to you by Dr. Zelenko's Z-Stack. Use code LIGHTHOUSE at ZStackLife.com to supercharge your immune system before cold and flu season. All of the polls before Tuesday's election predicted a huge red tidal wave, but what really happened was more like a red sun shower. What does this indicate? It could mean that the polls aren't relevant or reliable anymore. It could mean that Republican voters took massive wins for granted and just didn't turn out to vote. Some will say it's more proof of fraud or a selection rather than an election. I think the results show that far too many people put party politics above their own best interest. Polls showed that the economy and inflation were the number one priority of voters, and polls also showed that voters believe Republicans are better at handling those issues. But voters have been told for years that Republicans are racist Nazis. So maybe many people just won't vote Republican despite believing Republican candidates represent their own best interest. After all, who could vote for Hitler just because milk got too expensive? Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until next time, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
For the first time since its inception, RBN is offering a limited opportunity to you, the listener, to join our quest. You will be provided an effective platform on both internet and satellite broadcasting, and also gain the opportunity to both share your creativity with our producers and voice your message with thousands of patriots. Interested? Call 800-724-2719, extension 3, for details.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Roses each one met with the sun, sweetheart, when I met you. The sunshine had fled, the roses were dead, sweetheart, when I lost you. I lost the sunshine and roses, I lost the heavens of blue. I lost the beautiful rainbow. I lost the morning dew. I lost the angel who gave me summer the whole winter through. I lost the gladness that turned into sadness when I lost you. The birds ceased their song. Turned to wrong, sweetheart, when I lost you. A day turned to year, the world seemed in tears, sweetheart, when I lost you. I lost the sunshine and roses. I lost the heavens of blue. I lost the beautiful rainbow. I lost the morning dew. I lost the angel who gave me summer the whole winter through. I lost the gladness that turned into sadness when I lost you.
Okay. Thank you, Sam. Yeah, Olive Klein comes in there halfway through. So she's singing there with Harry McDonough, and that was one of the top 40 of 1915. They didn't believe me. And I just kind of like having some of the flavor of what the music was like at the time, because that drives so much. And like I said, Henry Ford, you really need to read The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem. over 100 years ago, and it's saying everything that's happening still, only intensified on steroids, as they say. And let me give out the number. So if anyone wants to start calling in, it's 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252. And a third time, 512-248-8252. And Sam had this great idea of what I'm doing now and asked if I would like to do it. And I thought about it and I thought, oh, yeah, this will be fun, especially this time of year. So you can do it, too. You heard Michael Herzog's ad. You call the business number and they'll tell you how to do it. So if anyone wants to call in, I'd appreciate it. And we can start talking about this whole event. And until you do, I want to talk about something that happened a little later. Actually, 1915 is when Billie Holiday, Eleonora, was born. And she had a very rough childhood and life in general. But as always, the Jews were controlling the entertainment. And a Jewish man had written the song Strange Fruit. And it was supposedly, you know, in the South. So it was after... We're always told after the Civil War, they were hanging all these black folks, right? But there's also the thing that goes around Jewish communities that every fingernail, and I guess that's toenails too, of a Jew are worth 1,000 non-Jews. So I think this is something that we're not hearing about, of course, but this is how evil it can get. This was retribution. Neither of the black men took the fall. In fact, during that trial, I think Grace mentioned they shot a gun off by his head, and it still didn't deter him. He wouldn't cop to their lies. So, let me see what he got here. Oh, and a fellow listener gave me a clue to the and I've heard of this before. Mike Gaddy talks about it. Blacks and the Jews by the NOA, the Nation of Islam. There's four volumes. But how they say this is the most important crime. And see, that's why it's trying to be erased from history, because it is so important. It shows just what's going on. And they're still trying to make him appear innocent. Even to this day, I think it was in 86 that they tried really diligently. And anytime you talk to anyone, I was told just this last week, oh, that's fantasy trail. But I was also told that day that Karl Marx, when I gave his real name as Moses Mordecai Levi, that talking about him, and right away I was called an anti-Semite, and that he was Christian because his mother was Christian before he was born. Now that's what I call crino. Christian in name only. And that's the greatest falsehood is what Harold Wallace Rosenthal says about the Jews, is they're pretending that it's their religion, even though it's peculiar. That's the only thing different. Not that they're a distinct people. And they are a distinct people. Some different than others. Some more aggressive than others. And some more of the lies that go on that don't get corrected that we hear everywhere is about Nazi. Does that mean you refuse to see? If you say Nazi, do you say, I'm willingly blinded myself to the truth? I don't care to investigate. Because that was a term that was started by a Jewish publicist named Konrad Heiden, H-E-I-D-E-N. And he took an Austrian-Bavarian colloquialism that just meant simpleton or country bumpkin, and twisted a little bit, so you have Nazi. Well, at the same time, we had the allies, the all lies, or the all eyes. If you want to look at the phonetics, and Dennis Fetchew, give credit for that trademark. He's very much into that, and he's very right that all letters and numbers and sounds are all related. You know, I mean, there's a lot of good in that kind of symbiotic relationship we have with, like, say, the birds, the trees blowing in the breeze, the different things that are uplifting to us, and good music. which has been almost stamped out. And interesting, one of the shows that Kanye West walked out of, they were Jews. And they made the point, one of them, that Harley Pasternak is Canadian. Well, Harley Pasternak is a Jew, and he's a handler. He's not just a trainer, and he has many, many under his belt. So this goes on all the time. Somebody please call in. Keep me company so we can talk about some things. Yeah, somebody says it was a great movie with Diana Ross as Billie Holiday, Lady Sings the Blues. And it shows some of what went on, but never the control from the background. Like I said, the Strange Fruit song, that was her signature song. They would turn down the lights and just have the light on her face, and then at the end it would just be silence and the music wouldn't come back up. It was just dark. So they're basically bragging about killing black people. This is how I see it. This is my observation. No one else has to have it. But after doing a lot of searching and researching, it's just very clear. You know, it's not just after the Civil War. No. They had this grudge. They never forgive, never forget, never enough, as Blackbird Nine says. And he also says they bully, bribe, bankrupt, banish, and bury. And that they do. So, anyhow, do I have the census statistics for the Civil War era? No, I don't have those census statistics. And I don't trust any. I mean, just recently we've heard there's now 8 billion people on the planet. Yeah? Who says? I don't believe anything they say anymore. I think they're doing pretty good killing people off with their bioweapon that spreads to other people. And off topic, since we're going there, I've just been looking into this Brunsons, B-R-U-N-S-O-N, and there's actually three brothers. But no one had ever approached the Supreme Court with the redress of grievances. And they put together something, and the Supreme Court actually asked them to improve it, and they used their lawyers. Because what's happening, and different ones are bringing it out, Madeline Gerwick, the astrologer on Jeff Prince, was talking about it, got a lot of people's attention because they listen there. But what's happening is the Congress under this administration and the usury suspects backing them are trying to limit terms of justices, and they want to stack the court. Okay, so now this grievance was that 388 Congress critters, and I guess maybe that includes Biden and Kamala, but they agreed with the that the 2020 election was legitimate, and over 100 did what they were supposed to do and said no, it wasn't, and they needed to have another election or counts or make it legitimate. And so these are all traitors. And there's two levels of treason way of dealing with it. You can have high treason and capital punishment. But if this were low treason, then all it means is they can't have office anywhere ever again. And that would be punishment probably enough. Although you probably see an awful lot of lobbyists suddenly for different companies. Oh, I'm not even looking at the screen. Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah. In fact, I still don't see it. All I have is my RBN. Thank you. Come on, Charlie.
How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I wanted to call in. I kind of tuned in late. Got to your show kind of late today, so I missed the first part of it. But it sounds like you're talking a little bit about reverse demonstration or racism. How blacks and Jews feel about whites. I don't know. It sounds like that's part of the topic. I did want to comment a little bit about what you were just talking about the election, though. And I personally, okay, I believe that that the crime for election fraud, cheating in a, when a politician is discovered cheating in a race or election, should be death penalty. Because well, people's lives are at stake. I mean, politicians put us into wars, and our young people are die, you know, by the hundreds of thousands in these wars.
And would be a strong deterrent.
Yes, it would, wouldn't it? I mean, if we wouldn't have to kill but one or two of them, and I think they would probably get the idea that this wasn't a good idea. And so, yeah, I think it should be the death penalty. I really do. Because of the fact that they have control over our lives that way, and a lot of people could suffer from it.
Maybe give them low treason the first time around and really clean out all the Congress critters, you know, at 388. And, you know, you'd have plenty of people probably that would fill their seats. That's the argument the Brunsons have. And, you know, and then tell them, this happens again, it's high treason. You're done.
I agree. I think that's a good idea. I want to get rid of them all. You know, I just believe we should. We got to do away with this. These term limits. You know, we got to put term limits in there. Actually, I mean, just the opposite was it. Do away with them. We got to institute them. The only time I think a term limit is a good thing is if you know, in a few cases. But most of the time, if they haven't done what they're supposed to do after, you know, say three terms, I think they need to go.
Under the Articles of Confederation, the state could yank them back right away. You know, if they weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing, they were brought home. Okay,
right.
And it wasn't.
Right.
And it wasn't like a lifelong business. There was only like a period of weeks or whatever that matters would be taken care of. You know, and that was the way it was in the States, too. I know here in Wisconsin, I haven't lived here, you know, but about 20 years. But they would go and do their, it wasn't paid job either. They would go to Madison and take care of business and go back to their farms. But nobody was paid
right.
for this.
Right. They didn't actually want to go because it disrupted their lives most of the time. It was something they did just. You know, because they,
and duty.
I guess because they felt that, yeah, duty and for their patriotic duty, yeah.
Yeah, they had a better sense of that. But see, this is, it only takes about a generation, 20 to 25 years. And many have said that, Yuri Bezmenov and many others, that they, you know, that's all they need before totally demoralized. And if you're demoralized, you don't have families, you don't have morals, then destabilization, it comes in really quickly and eventually a crisis, and then it's normalization because it's normal to see tanks on the street and whatever else. You know, this is the template.
That is the template, actually. That is the template. I think that a lot of this stuff that we're seeing, this, it's actually the stuff over in China is all pretty much phony. But those protests and stuff. I say that for a lot of reasons. There's a lot of people saying that, you know, the most people that they've ever seen at one of these protests was like 100, and yet you had like 200 cameras there. And you might have one person show up for a protest to complain about something, and they had 20 or 30 cameras on. It's all done by, it's all staged. But the point is why would they stage something like that? Because I think they're putting it into our subconscious and into our minds that, you know, this is the kind of thing that can come to us, that we might need to start protesting or whatever, and then we can get locked down or whatever. You know, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird.
Well,
it's weird.
Yeah. Now, again, with Harold Wallace Rosenthal, you know, he said we have to have control of the money so we can have international conquest through propaganda. And you have to realize that everything is propaganda. The movies, the music, the sports, the news, and especially the news, because they're over there and they're going to bring back stuff. You hear people repeating as if they're came out of God's mouth, you know, all these big protests and whatever's going on, and they're sealing up in their houses. Well, we don't know that, really. We see pictures of that, but we don't know that. they may be being groomed to be the next world power, okay? Because after they took down the World Trade Center, and that was dustification and some other things, that is energy that we could be using for such much better purposes. But they're basically moving there, and they've been moving there for some time. Dov Zakheim was the comptroller at the Department of Defense and took trillions to China. Nothing ever happened to him. He goes and comes as he pleases. His son works there. You know, so...
Right. Right.
We have, yeah, we have this control with no accountability.
Yeah, and nothing ever will happen to them. That's the sad thing about it. And that's where I think it really hurts our nation, too, is for those of us who do vote and who do follow issues and care about things, you know, it creates an apathy that, you know, is hard to overcome. And the voters will say, well, what's the use, you know, because nobody's... Nothing ever changes. We can't ever get anything done.
Well, I'm sorry. I have to agree with that anymore because it's true. It doesn't work. We've seen it. I mean, look what happened in 2020. How could that not be enough proof? And besides, right. When you're voting, what are you voting for? Your next slave master? You know, yeah. I want you to control me instead of you to control. No. You know, and like anarchy, we always hear this as if it's a bad term because, of course, it isn't. The real meaning is no rulers, not no rules. Okay? But again, it's with the morals. People don't have a family life. They're not brought up with Jesus Christ. And they fall apart, you know? They yield to the other force, the dark force. You know, people like say, oh, free will. And well, no, we really don't have free will. Why would prayer work if we had free will? No, we have our will. But our will, if it's not guided by higher forces, it will be guided by darker forces.
You know, if people just try it, you know, it's like, try it sometime. You might like it, actually. You know, if people would pray, they might find out that their prayers get answered. And then that would, you know, because that's how it works. That's how it worked with me. I see how the Lord provides me things that I, you know, that I ask for or I need. And it's just amazing, you know, how it happens. And sometimes it might take a while. And then, but as I look at it, I can look back and I say, I can see the Lord's hand in all of it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you just have to reach out, you know. So that's a good message for any listeners out there who hadn't found him, you know, is to reach out there and give it a shot. You know?
And be thankful. Be thankful when things seem to be rough because you're being taught something. You know, you just need to pay more attention and be thankful for everything that happens, even when it seems to be something bad. But you may be setting an example for someone else you don't know anything about, or you may be, you know, just something you need to learn, you know, like you learn to give, and giving is its own reward. Okay, now somebody said, you're posting about Tony Martin in here, and I've heard him a few times, and what annoyed me was his against black people, but he admits to having a lot of Jewish DNA himself because of the slave trade. Okay? You know, the slave owners. And 80% of the slave owners in the South were Jews. You know, they not only ran everything, because you get down to where you have the longer growing seasons and in the Caribbean with the sugar. And the one thing you don't hear about is the rum. Rum was like the oil of its day in the triangle trade. You know, you had sugar that was poisoning people in Europe and everything. But and you have the oldest buildings in all the slave ports are synagogues, you know. But this rum trade, they would feed the pay the sailors in rum. I was just thinking how salary comes from salt, right? And that's how the Romans, the salary was a salt. But they... have this trafficking. You also have to think then, well, okay, and the Indians, the Native Americans, most of them I think like to be called American Indians because that's what they always have been called. And they originally weren't run by chiefs. This was something that was brought in. They were, you know, they had councils. In fact, they were the mother-law. You know, because there were women included too, because they were the ones that would be raising the children and could see how they, what they would need to be, what position they would serve. And occasionally you would have, and I've read some about this, that they would have their own way of, like children around 9 or 10, if they're acting out all the time, and they didn't know what their purpose was. And they would actually bring them almost close to death and have these rites where they would suddenly realize what their purpose was for being alive. And that's another thing, you know, whatever the culture is that has caused morality over lack of it, you know, it's taken away at just about every turn.
Well, that's an interesting idea, a concept. I've actually looked into some of that about the Native American tribes. Some of them were, you know, matriarchal, but a lot of them were patriarchal also. I think around 14% were matriarchal.
I'm not saying that they were total. It's called clan mother law, but it would be mm-hmm. councils of both men and women. It wasn't just women, but they
right. They did have councils. Right. Yeah,
I'm just saying it wasn't one man as a chief. That was kind of right. a concept, because then they could come in and give them alcohol. I was talking about rum, right? And right. Asiatics very often can't handle alcohol, and they originated apparently in Asia. You know, and there we get into another discussion about who the Indians really are. And when Beringia was there, that's when the Bering Strait had land bridge across before the ice melted. And there were a lot of white Indians. And in the East and everywhere in this country, they'd say their Indians were white. Well, they came from Europe and Russia. Okay, you still have Karen Ann, I can't think of her whole name now, McDonald, but she also has a Russian name in there. The white bear clan, I guess. But they can trace their ancestry back. And she lives in Canada, so there's more of that kind of thing there too. And just to keep this conversation wandering, old Trudeau, he's up there with his entourage. He says, "I'm here for the louche," you know, the louche. So that's the emotional thing, and people don't think about that when you go to these games in the big stadiums and stuff. If you ever been, you think, is it the music? What is it? Your heart starts to race. Well, it's this whole bowl of emotions, people just filled with emotions, and they've seen, you know, UFOs or whatever, supposedly, but they're drawing that energy, that louche. And so it's another way we're milked as cattle, the way we're used. So if you don't control yourself, you know, self-responsibility, well, someone else will.
Well, it is important that one of the things that you said about looking at when things don't go well also, because, yeah, that's when we discover things and figure out where we're going wrong. You know, we have to look at it and say, okay, look, I've tried to do this like 5 times this way, and every time it's gone wrong, I need to stop. I want to look and see what it is that I'm doing here in this process and the reasoning. Maybe I need to change my attitude, or maybe I have to approach this situation a different way and look at it differently. And yeah, that's very important as well.
Yeah.
So anyway, Murr, I'm really enjoying your show this time around.
What was
the topic anyway? What is it? Did it have to do with racism?
Yeah, well, it started out with Leo Frank. You have to catch the archive after, because there's a nice clip in there. It's in the chat room, too. Oh, okay. Thank you, Charlie. I think we've got somebody else wants to come on.
Okay, very good.
Thank you so much. Oh, Kathleen, yes. Kathleen, come on board.
Hey, Mortimer. You're one of my favorite shows now.
Oh, thank you, Kathleen.
And
I so appreciated you speaking up for me.
Well, I think about today's show, sorry I didn't call earlier, but playing something like that piece you played, I think it's so important that that we find out the origins of things. We're just so ignorant, and again, I'm not apologizing for it because we're a product of our of our society. But also, I am very grateful for my parents who. Christianity was the main thing, and I just thank God every day for good parents. And but anyway, I think you're doing a wonderful job, and I do think that that's a great method to have something to talk and have a round table. I think that's a great thing to play something, and then we all call in.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yes,
and I love your music.
Oh, I was trying to find something. I thought, well, I guess I was inspired to find something that was popular at the time. So you kind of feel like you were there, you know?
Yes, that's very good. And I loved your music last week, too.
Oh, yeah. And Sam picked out a couple of good guitar tunes there, too. I like that. He's right on top of things.
All right. Yeah. Well, yes. One thing that he picked out for another show a couple of years ago that I just loved, it was... oh shoot! Now wait a second. Here it goes. Here's a little song I wrote. You don't have to sing it note for note. Don't worry. Be happy.
Don't worry, excellent.
Be happy.
thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah, okay. You know- God love you.
Thank you so much. God love you, too.
And God love Sam and Mike and Julie and all the RBN people. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sweetheart. Yep, you have to have your priorities straight. God, family, and country, in that order. And if you only have God, you have all you need. Thank you, Sam, for cutting in there. I wasn't sure where she was going with that. I like that. I like when she sings. That's great. Yep. I always think of the video with the blonde, and it's about dusk, and she has boots on, and she's walking down with a lighted little hula hoop she's twirling. The video they played with that, I like that.
And now a little tune written especially for me. Strange fruit. Southern trees bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind should suck for the sun to rot, for the tree to dry.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.